Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and welcome to the program. As always, I am joined by my excellent panel from America's fastest shrinking city, Youngstown, Ohio. We have author, activist, and barkeep, Sam Murphy. Sam, welcome.
Simon, thank you for that rousing introduction, and with all due apologies to my listening audience members in Detroit, that's true, Simon, you're right. We got a fast going. And I hope everybody had a happy Christmas and Kwanzaa, and can look forward to listening to us as we bring in out the old year and bring in the new year.
Right. And from the City of Angels, we're joined by well-known and well-respected attorney, Peter Haven. Peter, welcome.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Simon. It's great to be here, and happy holidays to everyone.
you won't say it's, you know, great to be here when I'm done with you.
Attaboy.
And from the wilds of New Jersey, my good friend, Bill Conrad. Bill, hello.
Hello, I hope everyone had a great Christmas holiday and you're enjoying this kind of between the two bookends of holidays here. Hope everyone is well, and look forward to an exciting show today, since I didn't receive anything about the agenda, so probably know nothing about what we're talking about.
Well, I like to keep everyone on their toes. In that vein, I want to start with an unusual item. You know,
oh, good.
On Christmas Day, I received a work-related phone call. Usually Christmas Day, no one calls me. You know? Right? It was an author. He's a retired IRS agent. Right, you know, the people we love to hate. And he has some of the best stories about life in the IRS. So, although our phone call wasn't about that, you know, I decided to go poking around in my audio archives. And I want to play you a quick snippet of an interview that I had with this gentleman. I'm sure you'll get a giggle out of it.
I had a fella who just hated to pay taxes. He did not want to pay tax. And I got this guy every year. I got his income tax account to collect. And I guess after about the third or fourth year, I caught him on a job, and we have something that's similar to a garnishee on wages. We call it a levy, and we have the authority to simply fill it out, sign it, and serve it on somebody, and then they have to pay us instead of them. Well, this man was a painter. He was painting a large house one afternoon. I knocked on the back door, hoping to find someone there. It turned out they were old people. They were asleep and they didn't hear me. And then I went around to the front porch where this guy was, and he was painting with a brush, and I walked partway up the steps, and I said his name. I thought I'd try again, just trying to collect from him. And he picked up the paint sprayer. It was sitting there, and the air compressor was running. And this guy charges down the steps at me, and he is spraying me. And then I'm running, and he's chasing me. And this must have been hilarious to see, really. Two big, tall guys running across the yard in a bright, sunlit afternoon, and no one saw this. And it was in town. But eventually he ran out of hose, and then he was hitting me. He was whopping me as he ran. So I turned around. I thought, this guy's trying to kill me. So I turned around, and we flailed away at each other for a while. Then we just stopped, and this guy said, if you come around here again, I'll beat you to death. I questioned his ability to do that. He hadn't really done much damage so far. But I gathered my stuff. I wiped paint off of me. Mainly it was on my back because I was running. And I got in my car and I left and I reported it. And they arrested the guy. He spent one night in jail. And it was months and months before his case came up in the Dayton Federal Court. And no one from IRS was there. There was an assistant U.S. attorney who handled this case. That's always what happens. They handle all the cases that come before them. And lies were told on the part of the taxpayer. And he made me look really bad. And they gave him a slap on the wrist. I think they convicted him of intimidating a federal agent. They had to do something because it was obvious that it was I was performing my duty when I was there, and it was in normal working hours and all that. But that happened, and the worst part of it was it ruined my clothes, and it was heck getting it out of my hair.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, I mean, I'm laughing and. You know, you're laughing, but I'm sure that at the time it was anything but humorous.
Well, that's true. It was. It happened so fast. I'm partway up the stairs to the porch. This is a truly big house, and there were about four or five steps to get up on the porch. And he put his brush down, picked up the gun from the compressor, and then the hose was probably 50 feet long, I think. And he had 50 feet in which to spray me. Then he started whopping me, and I was amazed. You know, and this happened. You know, this all happened. This took 10 seconds. You know,
right.
We had a little battle there, and then we stepped apart, and that was.
Okay, now, you know, I love the clip, you know, because it's. It's so incredibly silly, yeah. And I suspect we all want to do something like this. Well, now you know that some people actually do it. Sam, have you ever come across anything like that?
No, the closest thing. I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, people and the money are, you know, hard to separate. But I like the way he told the story at that night's. Homespun. It's hard to believe that guy was an IRS agent because he sounded so homey. You know what I mean? Like not a homey that one, but you know, so homespun, so countryist, backdoor woodsman type guy. So I can't believe he was an IRS agent, Simon. I think he's pulling the wool over your eye. I'm not surprised. I'm sure some of these guys have some crazy things. I mean, look, Wednesday night we were one of the few bars open for Christmas, and it was a dumb idea because all the crazies came in at night, and we had a guy come in, and he started playing knockout in the bar. And a white guy. We escorted him out, and he pulled a box cutter out, the ones that were used in 911. He was disarmed. My security held him down. The police came. And it's Christmas night, late, about right before midnight. And the police came. The guy went after the cops. Just went crazy, you know. And just, that's what happens, I guess, now in today's world. And they find out he's got a rap sheet as long as Highway 80 from the one coast to the other. Probably never should have been left out. Probably off his meds, you know. And you wonder, here's a guy, Christmas Day, probably depressed as hell, and decided to take it out on anybody he could see. And, unfortunate for him, he met my bouncer and he met the Austin Town Police Department. But I'm not surprised, you know, that happened to that. I'm glad the guy was able to tell his story. But I think we've talked about this, all the time on the show in various manners, how violent and unpredictable people are.
I mean, Peter, In your line of work, I'm sure that occasionally you, meet grumpy clients. What did you make of the IRS story?
Well, you know, this guy that was described in the IRS story, he's not just a grumpy man. He's a criminal. He's a flat-out criminal. And, he doesn't want to pay his taxes. He threatens people on his property with death and violence. He's not just a grumpy old man down the street. He's a criminal. And it's not surprising to me that he ended up in front of a court and he ended up spending a night in jail. That's what happens when you're that kind of person. And I think it's nice that we can all laugh about it after the fact. But the truth is, people like him just infuriate me. They infuriate me. They think that they can do what they want, play by their own set of rules, and there are no consequences of it. And in my opinion, most of their thoughts are just so ignorant and ill-informed that it really offends me. You know, the IRS agent said something very interesting. He said he lived in a big home, and I thought about that. The guy lives in a big home. Do you recall anything that the IRS told you, Simon, about, you know, what kind of home this was? It seemed like, from his description, a large home. So this guy has wherewithal to have a big home.
No. What Wayne was trying to do was talk to the owners of the house. The perpetrator was just a contractor hired to paint the outside of the house.
Well, I don't think that makes it any better. In fact, I think that makes it worse. The owners live in a big home, and they think that they have the right to hire some thug to, beat the tax guy up. And the owners apparently... and I'm trying to understand this. Is it the owners who didn't want to pay their taxes or this thug who didn't want to pay his taxes?
No, it was the painter. And the owners were asleep upstairs. They had no clue this was going on.
Well,
so it must be sound sleepers.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so that's obviously my understanding was incorrect. But I still don't like it when people think that they can just disregard their obligations in the world, and they think that they have the right to take the law into their own hands, so to speak, and engage in this kind of behavior. And I don't think he was just a grumpy guy. You don't act like that in a civilized society. You just don't, period. And I don't think there's any tolerance of it. I really don't. I don't find anything amusing about it. I find the guy's behavior really completely unacceptable. And he sounds like he had his day in court and he got punished. And hopefully he'll learn something from it. But I don't think he will.
No, neither do I. Bill. Do you have any comments on this story?
I just think it was a great story. Again, I'm surprised that he sounded so backwoodsy, almost like a Garrison Keillor of the IRS. This is just a matter of fact, and this crazy man came after me with his paint gun sprayer, and this is what I had to do. And he wasn't so smart,
Actually, Wayne is the source of many great stories. But let's move on to more recent events. I watched in awe and amazement the battle between Duck Dynasty and A&E. Personally, I think that Phil Robertson merely shared his personal thoughts in an interview, over areas that he had strong feelings. No harm, no foul. Now, I'm going to go to Sam first, because Sam, you mentioned Duck Dynasty in an email.
I was just joking.
Well, tell me your thoughts.
Well, you know, it was amazing to me, as we talked about last Sunday, how this show or this whole, you know, this guy, I guess, you know, spoke his mind or whatever he did, and insert his foot in mouth, and then I watched it for a little bit, I was amazed to how popular the show really was, because I don't watch, you know, pardon me, my wife and I do not watch a lot of cable television or cable television shows or even news right now. It's depressing, it's pathetic, although everyone tells me some of these shows on cable TV are really top-notch, well-written, but you have to be able to follow them from week to week, and we just don't have that type of time. And I don't like to tape things and then sit down and watch them. Now, that's just me. But when I watch some of the Duck Dynasty, you know, blurbs and, you know, hits and whatnot, saw it on the social media, read about it, I was a little intrigued. So I did watch an episode for 30 seconds, and I thought F-Troop, if you guys can remember F-Troop, Gilligan's Island and Lost in Space were better, and much better. And I couldn't watch it. And then I said, this is the top-rated show, and then I went to the Nielsen's, I Googled Nielsen's, and sure enough, as far as cable television goes, this is watched by a lot of people. Then I got more intrigued. Then I went to, I found out when I clicked on the Duck Dynasty A&E, they have a lot of merchandising. And may the Schwartz be with you, if you remember Spaceballs, it's about the merchandising. And that's what happened. I guess Walmart, Kmart, Jmart, Bmart, Costco, Sam's Club, all those places that I visited sell all the stuff. And they probably needed a boost in sales. They fired him. I think it was all control. I really believe now this was a setup. And they got what they wanted. The sales were ringing through. People who love this Duck Dynasty or anti-homo or homophobes or whatever you want to say ran to these stores and bought this stuff to show their support for Phil and watch the show. And now he's back. Everyone got what they wanted. And that's what it's about, merchandising. And it had nothing to do with about what he really stood for. It was a scam on the people, my opinion. As a matter of fact, Simon, I think I'm going to write a column for Blogger News about that, because that's what it seems to be about. It, like I said last week, it really reminded me of right before the election last year, or somewhere during it, when the Chick-fil-A became a huge thing because the owner said something that was perceived as being anti-homosexual, and then all these Duck Dynasty types, it was on the news, all the mainstream media talked about it, it was on the social networks, social media, and then everyone who was a pro Chick-fil-A then went to Chick-fil-A for that day, and their sales were the best they've ever been.
Right.
Merchandising. That's what I think it's all about.
Peter, I seriously doubt that you're an avid fan of Duck Dynasty, but yeah, I'm sure you've heard a little bit about the story.
Let me ask you a question. How did these guys? My understanding of Duck Dynasty is that these were a bunch of guys living out, you know, some rural environment, and did they get to be on television because they won the lottery? Is that what happened?
No, they actually have what's reputed to be a $400 million industry.
Doing what?
They make duck calls for hunters. You know, so you can go out and go whoop whoop whoop.
Say that again, Simon.
I'm not sure I could. Well, Anki,
well,
straight
you know,
face.
It's a constant reminder to me that I obviously chose the wrong occupation in life because there's more money in making duck calls and shows like Honey Boo Boo than there is in doing other things. I don't know what to make of any of this. I've never watched an episode of Duck Dynasty. I really don't have any desire to watch it. And nothing about this recent event changed that in any way, although it may be a very good show. I don't know. But I believe in free speech, and that may seem like I would support the right of a guy on Duck Dynasty to pop off. But that's a double-edged sword. It works both ways. And if you're going to exercise your right of free speech, you need to be able to understand that other people are going to exercise their right of free speech as well. So if you want to come out and make comments about gays and comparing them to drunks and terrorists, which I don't agree with, if you want to make comments like that, people are going to make comments in return, and they're going to express their opinion in return. And in this case, people expressed their opinions, and the network said, you know what, we don't really like this opinion. That's our opinion. Our opinion is we don't like it when you express these opinions. And they have a business and contractual relationship, and you have the right to do business with whoever you're going to do business with. And when A&E made its comments or opinions about what it didn't like about him saying what he wanted to say, other people expressed their opinions. And they said, well, now, wait a minute. We don't like it that you don't like it. And it's all a bunch of people talking and blowing off their hot air. And I suppose I'm one of them right now. And that's the I guess that's the irony of constitutional free speech. I don't see what all the hullabaloo was about. I really don't care. And I do think that if a guy is on television and he wants to make controversial statements that I don't think are accurate or true, he has to be able to suffer the consequences. And the consequences are other people aren't going to like it. That's just the way it is. Free speech may give you the right to say whatever you want, but it doesn't immunize you from the consequences of other people reacting to it.
Right. Now, the reality of this is A&E responds quickly and says, okay, Mr. Duck Dynasty, you know, you're on permanent, well, they didn't say permanent, but, you know, you're on a leave of absence, unpaid. You know, we will not be, inviting you back. And people went, no, we like Phil Robertson. So, his suspension lasted a week. And now he's back in the saddle, shall we say. that in my mind does not make much sense. You know, if you're going to take action and mean it. A&E did something incredibly dumb here. You don't pretend to be all high and mighty and then go, oh, darn, you know, our viewers don't like this choice and change it. Let me ask you this.
You just said something very interesting. You said you don't act high and mighty and then realize that you have overplayed your hand and turn around and change your mind. You say, don't do that. And my response is, why not? What's the big deal?
Oh, okay.
What's the consequence?
The big deal is what happened with Dog the Bounty Hunter. Same channel. Right? Dog was Dwayne Chapman, I think his name is. He was caught in some rather unfortunate voicemails using the N-word. Oh, so was that cooking woman.
Well, that's an interesting topic. Okay, well, he said some things that he shouldn't have said, and I take it it cost him his series? I don't see him on TV anymore. I don't know if he is or isn't.
Oh, yes, he is. He just shifted to CMT, and they're happy to have Dog. And in retaliation, guess what A&E is doing? They're replaying, you know, old episodes of Dog.
Well, I'm not sure where any of this leads us. I mean, I guess what I'm hearing is that, you know, it reminds me of the adage, there's no such thing as bad publicity. All publicity is good publicity.
That's right.
And I don't know if that's true or not, and I don't know if I necessarily condone that, but it seems to me that in the world of showbiz and Twitter and social media and everybody clamoring over each other to try to get attention, it seems to me that that may be true. I don't know. But you know, going back to the central question that I thought we were discussing is, this duck guy says some things that clearly are offensive. A lot of people aren't going to agree with. A&E responds, apparently overplays its hand, and then backtracks and says, okay, we're going to let you back on the show. We're going to save face and get an exit strategy on this by, you know, kind of slapping you on the wrist, suspending you for a week, and pretending like we're going to have sensitivity training or something. But we went back into the game. And the Duck Dynasty guy is back. And as Sam reports, everything looks rosy and business as usual. And the fans are going to keep watching Duck Dynasty. And A&E is still going to keep making money off of it. So... So, you know, there it is, a tempest in a teapot, and it's done, and it's behind us, and apparently nobody's going to be worse for it.
Right. Oh, you're entirely right.
Yeah.
And indeed, it could very well be a complete, you know, completely set up job.
I don't know if it was set up. I just think that that's the way it played out.
Right. Bill, do you have any thoughts on Duck Dynasty? I'm sure you're an avid watcher.
Yeah. I've seen a few of the episodes. It's a hoot, you know. Nothing else to say about it. I think that both of you are right. I look at this, and it really is all about the money. I think that what happens is that when a person is possibly suspended and kicked off of a network, they go to another network and they become sometimes even more popular than they were before. I think that this is just a positive situation for A&E. I mean, I looked at the statistics over the last week, and to see things like $80 million in ad revenue for A&E from the show, and $400 million in merchandise sales. Like, why would you want to lose this guy? That's a lot of stuff.
Well, that's,
that's a lot of income.
That's an interesting question, Bill, because it begs the issue advertisers want. And, you know, they're advertising dollars that are being generated. And if advertising dollars don't want to be associated with this particular ideology, then they can lose the advertising dollars, which probably explains why A&E reacted the way that it did to preserve its capital asset. But when people started to realize that the market audience was going to be lost because of this, then the advertising dollars came into play again, because now you're not driving off the advertising dollars, now you're driving off the advertising market. So that explains, at least it's one explanation for why you get the about face. because you're right, it is about preserving that revenue base and how best to do that. And if it's best achieved by distancing yourself from bad comments, that's what you do. And if it's not achieved by doing that, then you get back in and get back on board and clean up the mess.
Well, even so, Sam, have you heard of North Royalton, Ohio?
Yes, I have.
Okay. There's an organization called Faith to Action, and they have a program called MailTheDuck.com, which for people who don't like gays and homosexuals, you can send $7 in, and they will mail A&E a rubber duck in protest of Robertson's suspension, which is, so even that way, you know, nobody's losing. You know, this is just money spent, whether he's a bad guy or a good guy or the whole controversy, everyone is making lots of money off of this guy. So wherever you can keep him close to you or far from you, no matter how this all turns out, A&E, even Walt Disney owns a humongous share in A&E. They're making a lot of revenue off that too.
Who owns
so,
A&E?
Nobody loses.
Is Walt Disney the largest stockholder?
I don't know.
Yeah, they may not be the largest, but they're a significant.
That's something we have to look into in regards to what, you know, we know it's all about the money, okay? It's all about that. I would like to, and Peter brings up a good point. Who were the advertisers on A&E who would have been pissed off at Phil Robinson? Is that his last name, Robinson? Like, who would have been mad that their number one show star opens up his big mouth and pisses off potential ad buyers? Now, I don't know who advertises on A&E or Lifetime. I think they own Lifetime, too. They own a couple networks.
Yeah, so of course.
Okay, so they probably would have been mad about that. And then maybe the big cheeses at A&E themselves are homosexuals and were pissed off and offended. Because obviously he's back at work. The prices went up. The little quacky things that Simon tried to imitate went up. The hats, the camouflage, the DVD sales, it's all skyrocketing. So, I mean, like, yeah. I said, I really think this is orchestrated. I believe a lot of this is. I'm sorry. I believe there was more than one gunman at Dealey Plaza. And I believe when it comes to these type of things, it's all done. If you're not fired for what you say right away, like Jimmy the Greek, or all these other people have stuck their foot in their mouths for making super offensive statements way back to the 70s. It's even worse now. You would think, hey, you know, they would fire you. And it's probably, as Peter's pointed out, there's a clause in the contract. They sign off. They're making their money. And, you know, and if you screw up, you're going to pay for it. But this guy didn't. So I'm telling you, it was orchestrated. Because look what happened to the idiot who was on MSNBC, who lasted at least 2-3 weeks with what he said about Sarah Palin. And obviously, I couldn't believe he lasted 3 weeks, because that was one of the more crudest things I've ever heard by an alleged newscaster.
I forget what he said. What was that comment about Sarah Palin? What did he say?
Simon, you say it.
Well, if you can sanitize it a little bit, you know, speak in metaphors if you have to, use rhymes. But
actually,
give me a sense of what
it
sounds like.
I don't remember the exact quote, but my favorite Sarah Palin quote is how she can see she can see Russia from her bedroom window. I mean, that one definitely was.
I think it was a little bit more terrible than that, Simon. That's what Sarah Palin said. This guy said something along the lines, it was either performing people ought to masturbate into her face or shit on her face and eat feet, something. It was pretty disgusting. You know, I mean, yeah, I mean, and it was bad. I mean, for a guy on, for an alleged professional telejournalist to say something like that, I don't care how much you dislike a candidate or a public figure. Yeah, I mean, you have rules too you have to follow. And of course, you just, but MSNBC didn't fire this guy right away. And they let that, and I believe they let that pot boil over to help with their ratings. Limbaugh was talking about it. Fox, you know, then it comes the ping pong game between Fox, Limbaugh, and MSNBC and the mainstream media all talking about this crude remark that this guy said. And then he lasted like 3-4 weeks. And I guarantee he shows up somewhere else eventually because of who the target was. And of course, you know, and Palin has got a huge target on her back. That's her decision. She's the one, but I think she's got a tough skin and can handle it, obviously. But for MSNBC, there was no money in it to keep it going. Whereas in A&E with Duck Dynasty and Phil the Duck Caller, as you guys have all pointed out, a lot of dough in those little quacky things.
Absolutely.
It's a very interesting thing, and we mentioned Paula Deen, and I found that case, you know, very interesting to me. You know, this was a situation where she got sued by a former, I guess, employee, and she got sued on, if I remember correctly, on a theory of breach of oral contract and also race discrimination and harassment. And so she was being sued, I believe, by an African-American employee on these allegations, among others. And in her deposition, she was asked if she had ever used the N-word before, and she described it as something she had used in her past. But then she, in effect, reaffirmed her past use in her deposition, because then she went on to say how she also may have used it. obviously, somebody likes the sound of my voice. She used it again to describe someone who I think within the last several years pointed a gun at her or robbed her or something. And what she revealed in the deposition is that she still thinks it's appropriate in some instances to use that kind of word. That's what came across. Her empire crumbled.
Right, but I personally have a big problem with the N word. I don't use it, although on occasions, you know, it will spill out of my mouth. Apparently, me, Caucasian, I can't do that. But
well,
I,
you know, it's a very interesting topic these days, because in the past year or so, it has become increasingly a word of interest, and there are 1,000 stories about this. And I apologize, Simon. I think you're going to say that you're not supposed to use it, but there are occasions when you apparently hear it used.
Right. I can sit out on my front porch, read a book, you know, mess around on my computer, whatever, and there'll be, you know, 4 or 5 young black males walk by, you know, singing a rap song that uses the N-word more often than commas.
I've heard that too, and I heard it the other day. I was walking around on the Santa Monica Pier, and some guy was playing a boombox, and out of the boombox were coming all these N bombs, and you know, this was rap music, and it appeared to be okay when it's a boombox and it's a rap music and it's held out by an African American male. But there are other contexts in which it's not okay. And, you know, there's an interplay here between, you know, making a business commodity and selling it to the public, like Paula Deen does, And she wants everyone to come into a restaurant. She puts herself on television and wants everyone to like her. And then, of course, there's people being private citizens expressing their points of view in ordinary life, and they're not asking the whole world to come buy their products and shop at their establishments. And when you're in the a position where you're asking the world to buy your products, to buy your brand name, to brand yourself, and to buy shop at your establishments, you need to be very mindful about which audiences you're potentially offending. And that's why the Duck Dynasty thing was a big issue for a while, because A&E is very mindful of that. They have to be mindful of that. They would be grossly negligent if they weren't mindful of that. But the Duck Dynasty guy doesn't give a dang about that. He's just a guy who wants to express his opinion and feels strongly about it, and he doesn't give a hoot in a handbasket what A&E has to worry about. And that's a problem for A&E. There's an interrelationship between all of these things, and, I do believe in free speech, but I think people have to be mindful of the context. And there are some words and phrases that some people can use freely and other people cannot. And there's just no other way around it, in my opinion. Sports is interesting because in the last few years we've seen some very interesting thing in the world of sports where people have used these words, and in some cases it seems to have been more accepted than in others. Riley Cooper in Philadelphia dropped an N-bomb in the off-season, and his teammates forgave him and embraced him and welcomed him back with open arms. And then, of course, we were talking about the Miami situation a while ago where another guy felt that he had license to use that word, and he also talked about, if I'm not mistaken, say I'm defecating in a woman's mouth, and he's out of the NFL right now, and it's not clear if he's ever going to come back. We have to deal with the world the way it is, and not always the way we would like it to be.
And Sam, you own a bar, and I'm sure you hear all sorts of things. Do you throw someone out for using the N-word if they're white?
Absolutely.
Do you throw
someone,
them
if someone
out?
Says, if someone calls one of my bartenders a bitch, he's gone or she's gone. We don't put up with any abuses to anybody. We will escort people out of there, order them to leave. We have zero tolerance when it comes to any of that, man. I've banned people from the bars for some of their language.
Good for you, Sam.
I'm swearing languages. I think it's offensive. I'm Jewish. People have called me kike. Out you go. If someone calls someone white, even a honky, I'm not gonna put up with it. It's already alcohol is a problem. I don't need to put gasoline on the fire, you know. And I don't like it. I don't like that sort of language. You know, I like jokes. I like satire. I like humor. I like people have a good time. But this guy Wednesday night, who's calling himself the white N-word of Warren, which is a real troubled town right now, by the way. And he could come down there and he was causing problems. You know, I'm the white N, and that's what he was saying. And he was, and you know, now he's he'll be getting a free room and board for a while. I just can't stand that. You know, I can't stand any of that sort of language. All my employees feel the same way. We want people to have, to have comfort and to enjoy. You don't need to have people being verbally abusive. That causes a lot of fights and a lot of problems. A lot of people are sensitive. I just don't think there's no need for it. As you talk about the double standard that African Americans can throw it out constantly and nothing happens, and put it in rap music, and to me it's inflammatory. That does trouble me. You know, I mean, I think we have to have a more consistent basis from everybody in order. You know, that word should be dead and buried. But it's not. Some people are allowed to use it. Matter of fact, Peter, the wide receiver for the Eagles. Everyone said, I have a friend who lives in Philly who said once he started catching touchdown passes, he can say that word all he wants.
Well, there's a certain.
I'm a,
there's
friend
a, certain...
a big Eagles fan, and I had said when that word broke out about Riley Cooper. Is that his name?
Yeah, I think that's his name.
I think you're right. When he was throwing that and got caught or tweeting it or whatever, you know, he was like, they thought they were going to cut him and this and that. And I said, oh boy, you know, another Philadelphia, you know, where's Michael Vick when you need him? Or where's Rush Limbaugh when you need him? And, for him, he came back. And about 3 weeks later, this guy Cooper started making unbelievable catches. The Eagles started to win. No one cares. And that's sort of like the American way in sports, right? I mean, you're putting your mouth. But boy, if you start winning and performing, everyone forgets what you did. But Simon, to answer your question, I don't want it. You want to go to the bar and insult people? Go. Don't do it around me. Don't do it around me, my staff, or my regulars.
Okay, I have this huge list of subjects. So let's move on. I was absolutely amazed to see a number of stories, and I can't remember which organization broke it, but good old Edward Snowden has declared victory. All right. He is claiming that, you know, he's found the sweet spot. Now everyone is on the NSA, and, you know, rather than the NSA using a microscope to view us, you know, it's now us viewing the NSA. I'm not sure. I declare Snowden a victory. You know, it doesn't matter how you slice and dice it. You know, the guy is a traitor. Who wants to pick that one up? Bill?
Is Bill there?
Yeah, I'm here. So, I was going on line to look at this story that you brought up, and yeah, that's crazy. That's crazy. I mean, the only way he could say we're really we won. I mean, do you have insight to be able to watch the NSA a whole lot more like under a microscope? No, I don't. Do you, Sam? Do you? Peter, I have no idea how to look at the NSA better, but because everything's still filtered through the news. So I don't get it. He's a traitor, and we're stuck with him, and he's bragging about something, about an award that he doesn't even hold. So I'm confused.
Sam, you're the kind of guy that might have a comment on this.
I think Eric Snowden should have been the Time Man of the Year. As a hero. I think what he's done is put his life on the line for what he believes in. To me, he's the Nathan Hale of the 21st century. And a lot of people don't know who Nathan Hale is, but he's a guy who gave his one life to give to his country. And he did, and he got hung for being spying what he thought was on the British for the struggling American revolution at that time. And I think we have a struggling revolution in this country of trying to take back our government and getting our civil liberties back. And I consider him the Nathan Hale. And he's, in a way, he is dead man walking because he's living in Russia. He can't visit his family. I'm sure, or any of that stuff, you know, that we all take for granted that we can do, and, you know, move freely in the United States of America and other places with a passport. He cannot do that. I'm sure his money's running out, which is always a terrifying thought for anybody. But I think that what he's done is incredible. It's coming out that it's incredible, and there's more to it. There's over a million documents that he is still there and wants to get out. The United States, it's been going on since the 70s, and as technology has been getting better and better and more efficient, and stronger and whatnot. There's been it's run amok. It is 1984, and people should be scared to death that our country is going that way, because we all know all empires, if you understand history, it's all about controlling the thought process of people to stay in power. And if you can start doing that, in America, we always used to be the beacon of, you couldn't. We were always the exception to the rule, and now we're falling into that same rut for many, many reasons, you know, dumbing down. People don't care. They'd rather talk, as Peter said, they'd rather watch Honey Boo Boo and Duck Dynasty. They care more about who's going to get the first-round draft choice in the NFL than what the NFL, or the NFL team is doing than the NSA. And what the NSA is doing, and I'm saying, what do we need the NSA for? We've got the CIA, we've got the FBI, we've got the ATF, we've got the state police, the military police, we've got military intelligence. We've got enough of these organizations. How many more do you need? And you've got the Homeland Security. I mean, what a waste of money. I mean, and then they spy on us? For what reason? They're not catching anybody. As a matter of fact, we found out they have caught nobody because of this NSA crap. And they say that they have. Well, the proof's in the pudding, and the pudding isn't there. There's a hole in the donut as far as I'm concerned. And Eric Snowden, I wish you the best of luck, and I think someday you'll be getting a ticker tape parade in Manhattan, and I like to be throwing graffiti at you.
You know, Sam, I love it when you go off like that, because there's so much that you say that I completely agree with. I really do. And you're an eloquent spokesman for civil liberties, and you're absolutely right. One of the things that any free democracy or free people should fear is being controlled and manipulated by those in power. I completely agree with you in that regard. But I have a tough time figuring out, you know, you would say that Snowden should be considered a hero. And I guess what I ask is, what exactly has he accomplished? What do you think specifically he has done to help his country? Specifically.
To get the word to open up the debate that didn't exist before. I mean, I never knew. I consider myself a pretty well-read, informed individual. I know all you guys are, and I know a lot of people listening.
Oh, just so we're clear, I am not. Just so we're clear, I am
well,
not.
We're not.
I am not well-read.
I never knew about
the
NSA. I mean, I graduated in poli sci. I went to. I had two great professors who had every degree known to mankind, and none of them ever brought. And they were about the NSA. We always talked about the CIA, the FBI, and the CIA's powers, the FBI, and all that. And I never knew about the NSA. The closest thing I thought to the NSA until Snowden came out was the drones, spying, which to me was what Rand Paul brought up, and he made that a big, huge issue. And now we know that the NSA makes the drones look like, like kindergarten. It's like a sandbox. And I think that it has to be addressed and addressed accordingly. I think a federal judge has one federal judge agreed, one federal judge didn't. That's what makes, Peter, as you always point out, that's what makes our system great. It's now out. What I think the biggest thing is, it's now ready for debate, and next year in the presidential election, we will see that debate. And I think the president himself, who has started to rein back the powers of the NSA, may be too late.
I think it's going to be resolved in the courts. I think that what's happening now is this is heading towards some sort of challenge before a federal court. I'm looking at an article here. I guess this comes from Fox News, which I consider to be a dubious source. But Fox News quotes Michigan GOP Republican Mike Rogers, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, said that Snowden's release of classified documents this summer jeopardized the safety of troops in Afghanistan and gave nations such as China and Russia valuable insight into how America's intelligence services operate. Now, that's actually not even a quote. That's a paraphrase of a quote. That's what Fox said that Republican House Representative Mike Rogers, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, said. I don't know how accurate that statement is. But it does appear that this article also talks about how there are cases now coursing in the federal court system that may scrutinize or challenge NSA's authority to look at things like phone records in particular, and it'll get resolved in the courts. I don't know when that will happen, or if it'll get up to the highest court in the land. I don't know. But I suppose you're right, Sam. The important part about checks and balances and democracy is people being informed, people being aware that things are an issue.
Yes, Pete, I hate to interrupt you, but what do you guys?
Oh, please interrupt
me. Don't you think this is almost? I know some people say, "Well, like this, the guy you just quoted. Hey, this guy put people in harm's way. Well, they already are in harm's way, Mr. Representative. Okay, number one. Number two. Don't you think I view what Snowden did as whistleblowing on steroids, for lack of a better term? What is wrong with telling? If the people in government are doing something wrong, and somebody has to have an obligation. I wish more people had moral obligation to come out and say, this guy's a crook, this guy's graft, here's the proof, because they can prove it. And that's what Snowden did, in my opinion. He goes, hey, this organization is run amok, and he shined a light on it. You know, we all live in a country where we're supposed to have sunshine laws. Everything government does is supposed to be transparent, and that even got difficult here locally.
Well, you know, you're right, Sam. You're right, and I was thinking about this the other day, and I thought of two other situations, and you'll pardon the comparisons because they're probably not very good comparisons. But we talked about this before. I thought about the paralegal who worked for a law firm that exposed things that the tobacco industry were doing wrong. That paralegal, in theory, was bound by the same rules of confidentiality as the law firm was. And when a law firm hires a paralegal like that, they generally make the paralegal aware that even though he or she is not a lawyer, they're bound by attorney-client confidentiality. And that paralegal, and there was a movie about this, I think it was Russell Crowe or something, and he felt the need to expose the tobacco industry, and so he absconded with the memo and produced it, and I forget, they were putting chemicals in cigarettes or something. Am I the only one who remembers this, or does anybody else remember?
No, go ahead, I remember. Go ahead.
No, I remember it.
Well, you know, the way it was depicted in the movie, and I don't know how accurate it was, is, you know, this was a terrible choice for this guy, but he felt strongly about it, and he, as far as I can recall, he faced the music. He said, okay, I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to break a rule. I'm going to be ostracized. I may even be sued for this, but I'm going to do it, and I'm going to take my lumps. I'm going to take my punishment, and whatever consequences there are, I'm going to live with them. And then I thought about our good friend Johnny Manziel, that crazy quarterback from Texas A&M. And for those who don't know the story, Johnny Manziel is a guy who is a good quarterback, very popular, kind of thinks the whole world revolves around him. And by all accounts, he wants to be able to make money right now. And he thinks that a college athlete like himself should be able to make money. And he should be able to make money, for instance, by signing T-shirts and autographs and making money on that. He's the guy who controls his image. But the NCAA has a rule, which many have criticized, and it says that you can't do that. You know, a few years ago, a bunch of Ohio State players got suspended because they, I guess they gave signed jerseys in exchange for getting tattoos or something, blah, blah, blah. And Johnny Manziel supposedly went into some, he was at the Heisman Award ceremony or the national championship game a couple years ago, and he went into a hotel room and he signed thousands of pictures and footballs. And somebody videotaped him doing this, and he said on the videotape, if you tell anybody that I did this, I'm going to deny it. And so he broke the rule. He knew he was breaking the rule. And there were people who defended him when they found out about this on the grounds that it was ideological. But Manziel didn't give a dang about the ideology. He just wanted to make money. He wasn't going to even admit he did it. He was going to lie to cover it up. And he was going to do everything he could to avoid any consequences of being caught red-handed. And he dodged the bullet. He dodged the bullet because, you know, they're just apparently, even with this videotape, which the makers wouldn't turn over to the NCAA, probably because they got paid by someone in Manziel's camp. He dodged the bullet. He played another year of football. And, you know, next year he'll be able to turn pro and make a lot of money. So you consider these examples. One guy who as I understood it, stands on his ideology, suffers the consequences, and does it truly because he believes in what he's doing. And you have another guy who doesn't give a dang about the ideology. He just wants to make money, and he's going to lie, cheat, and steal to do it. And then you have Snowden. And Snowden is an independent contractor. He has access to intelligence information. I do believe that at some level, revealing this sensitive information, which I believe he had to have sworn on a stack of Bibles he would not reveal. And he does it. And I don't know exactly who's at risk because of that, but I think something was at risk, and I have a real problem with him doing it. And then he bolts out of town. He runs out of the country. He leaves. You know, the best way to draw attention to his cause would have been to stay and face the consequences and go to court and tell everybody why he did what he did. But that's not what he did. He ran away. And he's hiding in the Soviet Union, you know, one of the very countries that was supposed to keep protective information from. And he's sending out Twitter bombs telling everybody that he's happy, he's done his job. And you know, one day he hopes to come back to the U.S. And maybe you're right, Sam. Maybe he'll come back a ticker tape hero. But I tell you, I would have had a lot more respect for the guy if he had stayed here and faced the music and testified and told everybody what he did and why he did and how it was a big crisis for him and he really couldn't be compelled to keep it inside him anymore. Now, maybe that's too much to ask, but I would have looked at him in a completely different way.
I think you would have been looking at him in a coffin. He would have been assassinated.
Wow. Well, that's a big thing.
I'm serious about that. That's why he took off.
That's true, I don't see how his life is any less in threat now than it was before. But if you're right, then you know that's a piece of the puzzle I don't have.
I'm just a gut feeling. I just don't trust the. I just don't trust the government, and I think that's why they want him dead. And I think he has a lot of other secrets out there that you know. I'm not talking about who's sleeping with who or any of that sort of crapola. I'm talking about what they're the illegal stuff that's going on. And, you know, let's face it, guys. I mean, wouldn't it have been great if you know, let's go back in time. Okay, wouldn't it have been great if one of Nixon's henchmen would have spilled the beef? They did have one. There was a guy called Deep Throat. He was doing what Snowden does. He was leaking. See, I think it was Mark Felt. He was an FBI, number two guy at the FBI. It came out after he died. He was Deep Throat. He was giving Woodward all that inside information that helped bring down, rightfully so, Tricky Dicky and that cast of characters. And I'm glad Mark Felt did it, but he couldn't come out. He had to come up with a nom de plume and whatnot. Maybe Snowden should have done it that way. But maybe, like I said, Peter, I think he was fearful for his life.
Well, I think he's young, and I think he is a tad idealistic. But there's something about him that also suggests to me that he wants a little publicity too. And that's kind of a problem for me because I don't like it when people do things just to get their faces and images in the news.
I see your point, but I think that's what you have to do now in today's celebrity gawking world.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, do you agree with that?
Well,
I think he almost has to come out.
To a certain extent, it's unavoidable. If you want to get your message out, you have to get in the news. So obviously, you want to do it. But I guess I'm a little bit cynical. When I see a politician, I don't see a cause. I see a guy who likes to be have public fanfare. And when I see an actor, I don't see talent. I see someone who really just wants to be, in front of everybody and in the spotlight. I'm cynical, and that's probably not fair or accurate. Certainly not all encompassing, but that's what my suspicious mind tends to see. You raise some very good points. I don't know all the details about this guy. I don't know what he would have faced if he had stayed. I find it hard to believe he would have been assassinated. I suppose stranger things have happened. I don't know why he's any less at risk of assassination now than he was before. I don't know what his penalties would have been. Maybe he would have spent 30 years in military prison. I don't know. He had to have thought about the consequences of what he was going to do before he did it. He had to have thought that, he was going to, he had to have thought it out. he didn't just act in a vacuum and say, oh, I was going to do this, and then suddenly, holy cow, I better get out of town. He had to set it up. He had to think about it in advance. He planned it. He released the data, and he ran. And it wasn't all just knee-jerk reactions. He had to have planned it out. And maybe he's got the whole thing mapped out even more than we give him credit for. And he's got a people talk about an exit strategy. Maybe he has a return strategy. Maybe he has a cache of additional information. And he threw a little light on this subject, and then he'll come back to the feds and say, look, I'll return everything, and everything's secure if you drop all charges and let me back in. I don't know.
Okay. This is one that really hasn't received much publicity. You know, it's not nearly as sexy as spying on your global friends' phone calls, but I find it amazing. There's a company called RSA. No one's ever heard of them, but they are huge in the security industry. They basically create what's called random number generators, and they're very important in the world of codes. The NSA paid RSA $10 million to promote a piece of code used in commercial encryption software. And guess what? It had a back door. It made it much easier for any encryption vendor using the Be Safe library. It just pisses me off. Sam, have you come across this?
Nope, never heard of it. I'm hoping that Bill or Peter can shed some light on it for me.
I know nothing about it. I know nothing.
Sorry,
oh, nothing.
I saw nothing.
Well, it did cross my path, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 days ago. And I don't know if it's any newer than that, but it really reminded me a lot of the movie Sneakers. I don't know if you're familiar with that. No More, where it came out to be No More Secrets. It sounded so much like that movie that it was kind of unnerving. You know, if everyone has access to the premise of the movie was, is if everyone has access to everyone's codes, every government would know each other's secrets because they would have this piece of software that could overlay all these security systems, and it would decrypt everything. So it was kind of an interesting approach.
What would the world be like if there were no secrets? It's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting as
well, it sounds like
we
made a bad investment. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Interesting as none of you seem to know about RSA. Let's move on. Let's talk.
How about Benghazi? What's going on with Benghazi?
I'm going to get there. okay. We can do this.
No,
right
I didn't
now.
Know it was on your to-do list. We can tiptoe through the tulips. Let's talk about something else.
Nah. No, New York Times publishes a report on Benghazi. In part, it vindicates Obama. You know, Al-Qaeda were not involved. It was just a small local militia group that did it. I have a lot of problems with the New York Times report, and it's long. It is online. I'm guessing it's about 100 pages. You know, I have my sources, and my sources say New York Times is full of dog poop.
Well, what do your sources say happened then? Let's talk about your sources, Simon's sources. I like that, the SM.
my
Simon's sources say. Simon's sources say. I don't want you to reveal any names, obviously, because you know, I wouldn't want to jeopardize these internal sources, and you know, this is volatile areas of the country we're talking about. But just other than the New York Times is full of dog poop, do they have anything else insightful to offer? They're saying it definitely was Al Qaeda.
The New York Times is saying it definitely was not Al Qaeda.
Well, I think that their report, which I've only read a summary of, simply stated that they didn't find sufficient evidence to indicate that it was organized by Al-Qaeda. And their report, which we have laughed at in the past, stated that all the evidence pointed to some sort of spontaneous insurgence that was a bit like a match on kindling, and was apparently, according to the New York Times and the people that they interviewed, caused in large part by, guess what, this stupid video that we've all laughed at and panned in the past. Now, I agree with you, Simon. The New York Times is a newspaper, and you know, as a general rule, I don't like to rely on journalists to gather intelligence. But as we have talked about in this show, sometimes that's how you get the best intelligence, when ordinary people go looking for information that they want to find out there. You know, whether you call it a whistleblower Snowden or whether you call it investigative journalism, this is how things get discovered and revealed. And I don't know what to make of the report. I haven't read the full thing, but it seems to me that you know, they've interviewed all these people, and they can't find any evidence other than the very same thing which the administration came out and said was a kindling spark for this years ago. So
okay.
what do we make of that?
But what you end up with is a nice fluff piece that helps the Obama administration.
Well, you're right. You can call it a fluff piece. I mean, but that's not really the question. The question is not whether it's fluffy and nice for the administration. The question is whether or not it's accurate. You know, that's my point of view. Is it accurate? And you know, we live in a world of conspiracy theories and all kinds of things. I find it hard to believe that the New York Times would send some reporters out to this part of the world, and they would interview a lot of people, and they would come back with a story like this, unless it was accurate. I mean, as a lawyer, I can tell you that when I have a case, people come to me and they say, this is what happened. And I don't necessarily believe them. I take my notes and I say, okay, this is Joe's version of the events. And then I go talk to as many other people as I can. And what happens is, when you talk to as many people as you can, you get different points of view, and it's like shining little light beams into the dark. And you get enough angles, and then pretty soon an object emerges, and you get a perspective on what happened. It's never one story or another, but it's a bunch of stories. And so if this New York Times report is an amalgamation of different people's accounts, then it seems to me that carries some degree of credibility.
I think you should read the entire thing. And in many ways, I think it vindicates Dylan Davis. Yeah, that's a whole different program.
Well, are there any points, high points, or specific items you want to call our attention to? Anything in particular that sticks out? If you know, I take it you've read the report.
No,
you want us to discover on our own. I like that. Okay, fair enough. I can teach you, but it's better if you walk the road yourself. Well said,
damn
young
lawyers.
Skywalker. The force is strong in you.
No, in many ways, the report or the New York Times does walk the same road as Dylan, and that bothers me. It bothers me greatly that, you know, the New York Times decided to commission what obviously was going to be a very expensive exercise. It is what it is.
Well, apparently, you know, this is an area that, you know, as Sam has said, it's not going to go away. It's an important issue, and people want answers on it. And if the New York Times did anything, it kept the issue alive. And now others who will disagree with the New York Times findings, they are perfectly free to go out and do their own type of investigation or, you know, draw their own reports. And I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing that in the next month or so. You know, but you know, that's keeping the issue alive, and apparently that's still important in and of itself.
Huh. And Sam, any thoughts?
Well, yeah, I think it's the gift that keeps on giving, whether it's the New York Times or Fox News or whatnot. I still think it in the age of all this high tech stuff we have, NSA, CIA, FBI, again, all the alphabet, we still don't have the answers. And, you know, it bothers me as a citizen, whether it's at the local level, state level, federal level, international level, that transparency is out the window. The American people are paying for all this stuff, whether in blood or in treasure, and we never can get the answers. And I have no problem. If the New York Times uncovers the truth, God bless them all there. If Fox News does it, that's great. That's what they're paid to do. That's what journalism is supposed to do. And, you know, I don't know. I haven't read it. I intend to read it. Again, like, I have a hard time. If it comes from the New York Times, my first reaction is, it's a whitewash for the Obama administration. Comes from Fox News, it's a whitewash for the GOP. Isn't that, and I consider that a real travesty of our time, that our media is so biased and not even some people aren't reporters, they are repeaters. And it bothers me, so I'm going to have to go online and read it. And but the bottom line is, we still don't know what the answers are, and that's sad. And people are dead. That part of the country, that part of the world, is still a tinderbox. And I think the world's getting more and more violent. There was a suicide bombing in Russia today. They have to deal with it now, and it's happening all around the world. A lot of anger, violence, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And the top story of the year, I guess, according to AP, was the Boston bombing. And, you know, now we're, you know, and now it's happening everywhere. I mean, I think it's gone everywhere because it's been unchecked. The people who are responsible for Benghazi have not been brought to justice. And that's pretty pathetic with all the firepower we have.
I'm in total agreement. Okay, I'm looking at the clock. There's a couple of other stories I'm hoping we can touch on, if that's okay with you folks. How about Target, or as I prefer to call them, Tajay.
Well, that's a very funny story because I went home, as I said, to visit my dear mother and father over the holiday, and my mom and I went out to dinner, and before we went out to dinner, she wanted to stop at Target, and I had heard news about this in the back of my mind, but I hadn't really registered, and pun not intended. And as we went to the register to check out, the teller asked her if she wanted to charge her card, and my mother did something I haven't seen her do in a while. She broke out her checkbook and she said, "No, I'm afraid to use my card because of that situation." And I kind of scrunched my face a little bit, and I thought, what on earth is she talking about? And then I remembered that apparently there was this whole credit card scandal at Target, and or Target, as Simon said. And,
well, it just makes it sound more upscale.
Well, you know, that's what I knew somebody else who called it Target as well, and the first time she said that, I said, what on earth are you talking about? To Target. But it is apparently a place where America loves to shop, and even after the credit card scandal, I can assure you that that place was packed, and you know, they're doing a lot of business. Now, what exactly happened, Simon? Some employee or some hacker got access to all the credit card information? Is that what happened?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. Just 40
million. It was like
$10 million.
I heard some figure like $10 million in transactions had been charged to credit cards and they were fraudulent. Is that accurate, or am I just making up stats now?
No, I think you're making them up.
Okay,
but
that's good. I like it when I do that.
What actually happened is that 40 million debit card numbers got stolen. And get this. You know, they didn't get the PIN numbers, but PIN numbers are only 4 digits. You know, and yeah, I'm a nice guy, you know, but putting my head in the position of being a bad guy. Generally, you can't brute force a PIN number. You know, you swipe the card, you get 3 shots getting it right, you know, before the bank says, no, you know, this count ain't right.
And then it takes your picture.
Right. But, you know, I can't claim to be a great mathematician. I'm really not. But,
oh, you can still claim you are.
Nah. But, you know, PIN numbers are usually 4 digits. So, you know, if you've got 40 million accounts and you have, well, you can just pick out, you know, 3 PIN numbers at random, you're going to get 16,000 accounts.
Well, I think it's worse than that because I think many people, because we live in a culture that requires them to have random number usages on multiple portals, if you will, you know, internet and bank and card and debit card and all that. Many people pick numbers that they can easily remember, and then they use them universally across multiple accounts. And oftentimes, because some people are so have such trouble keeping these phrases in mind, they pick sequences that are fairly obvious. You remember, I don't know if you guys remember, but Samsonite, somebody used to make a briefcase and it had a little Rolo dial, or remember the brief, remember
zero,
the suitcases?
Zero, zero.
Everybody used to pick this, just send it all to zeros, that'll be the password, and people have, and I had a briefcase like that once, and I think I set it to 1234, and that's what you get. So if you get access to multiple accounts, the first thing I think you do, thinking like a criminal, betraying my criminal mind here, is you run through the random number patterns that are most likely to be used, like 000 or 1234 or 9876 or what have you. And that's where you're going to get a big hit, because you're going to get a lot of people, 1111, 2222, or what have you. And that'll open up a lot of doors right there, I'm sorry to say, in my opinion. In my opinion.
Well, you know what's even worse than all of this? For debit cards, you can still take a debit card and use it at a place where you charge. So all you have to do is to put a signature, and they're not comparing the signature versus the bank. You know, you can write messy as a signature, and you can still charge something, and don't put it through as a debit card. You put it through as a credit, and you're done anyway.
That's a good point. I do recommend to people that they don't – it still doesn't work, but I do recommend to people – that they do credit card transactions as opposed to debit card transactions, just like you said, Bill. And I also recommend that people write on the back of their credit card, they don't sign their name. Instead, they write check ID. And in theory, that's supposed to tell the teller or the register person, whoever you're giving the credit card to, that there is no signature to verify. Ask for the person's ID to be sure that that's who's using the card. Now, I don't think anybody does that, but, you know, I offer it to you for what it's worth. And when I say I don't think anybody does that, I don't think anybody, when it says check ID, I don't think anybody ever asks for your ID, because my credit card says check ID and nobody ever asks for my ID. And it's true. I pretty much, you get to those electronic panels and you sign your name, and sometimes I'm in a rush and I just don't sign very well, and sometimes I got my frustrated lawyer mind working, and I scribble outside the signature box and I go off the screen and it prompts me, but then it approves the transaction anyway. You know, get the sale done. We'll worry about who bought it later. Let's get the money in the door.
Okay, there's one last issue I want to bring up, and I'm going to aim this at Sam. What are Congress going to do in 2014? Let's face it, you know, 2013 was a bit of a disaster. I believe they managed 57 laws, most of which were pointless. You know, are we going to see more of the same next year?
Well, I want to make one comment on the target. I think the NSA should find out who the hackers are and put them in charge of the Obamacare website. Okay? If the target thing doesn't scare everybody about electronic snooping, imagine what NSA could do. They're always doing. So anyway, that's my comment on that. Congress, I'm a big believer, that our government was founded to be gridlock. That's why we have checks and balances. They're not supposed to do a lot of stuff, except if it's an extreme emergency, declare war, and things of that nature, and that gridlock is good. Unfortunately, that means that you have statesmen, stateswomen in office who are all trying to get forge a compromise, get things done through compromise, and both sides win, and I mean the American people win. That doesn't exist anymore. We have everybody takes the ball and wants to go home, and that's what we've got, whether the GOP or they're in the Democratic Party. I think this year is going to be more. This year you'll see they've already passed the budget bill, so they're not going to shut down the government. They're not going to do anything like that. All 435 members give a shit about is getting reelected. So they're all going to be out there is getting money, 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 more money, more money, more money, prostituting themselves to the special interest group to get elected. However, as a bar owner, I do see one law. I think a lot of feel-good laws will be passed that all of them can go home and beat the drum, re-election drum for. One of those will not surprise me if the blood alcohol level is reduced from 0.08 to 0.05 for the revenue streams it will bring in, and the feel-good thing it will be for both Republicans and Democrats without care for what the ramifications are. That bill is already being worked on, the National Transportation Safety, whatever it's called. So that's one bill, I think, and other bills will come for that. And, you know, and then that's what's going to happen. So to be ready for a lot of feel-good legislation so these guys, can, men and women, can all pat themselves on the backs and try to get reelected in November.
Oh, okay. We're almost flat out of time. Sam, is the Tea Party going to implode?
Right now, like I said earlier before the show started, a month is a long time in politics. A year is even a longer time. I'm gonna say no at this point because right now they'll win 10, they'll lose 10. Right now they break even.
And I have one last comment for you. Was busting the filibuster a good move?
I think it's going to come back and bite the I think if they have to do it the real way, you know, like we've seen in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, then I'm all for that. I think they should have to stand up there. That's what it says in the Constitution. Get up there and say your piece as long as you can. I think Paul did it better than Cruz did it. It's a great way to make yourself a national, you know, person. The Democrats could be in trouble for that if the Republicans take the Senate, because they're not going to give it back, the so-called nuclear option or whatever they call it. And, you know, I have to tell you right now, my life is good. Today's show was fabulously wonderful, great, because we didn't talk about politics. I can't even watch the news anymore. It's so disgusting and unentertaining and just horrible. Of the way everyone treats each other, left treats right, right treats left, and what this country needs is a real strong third party to push these other two parties where they belong, off the cliff.
Okay, and Sam, this is a hot political rumor, but it's nothing more than a rumor. The GOP are going to hold their convention on a cruise ship.
I want to see what I want to see. My New Year's thing is I want to see Rand Paul from the Republican Party and Ron Wyden, who's a Democrat from Oregon, a great civil libertarian, break ranks and form a third party. That's what I want to see. That's what I'd like to see done. That's my wish for the new year, that a third party emerge, starts in 2014, get some people elected, and run someone in 2016. Those two guys would be fabulous choices, they would, to do that. And that's what this country needs. We need a sensible third party that brings the best of both parties and jettisons the worst of both parties so America can move forward, or we're going to just become our own worst enemy.
And, Peter, your parting thoughts for us.
Well, I think that, in theory, people like the idea of a three-party system. But in reality, I don't think it works. And I think that right now, we do have a three-party system. We do have three parties. We have Republicans, we have Democrats, and we have Tea Party. And this was one of the lowest productivity years in Congress ever, sessions, I should say. And I don't, I don't see that changing in the near future. I think we do have a three-party system, and I think there's a problem with it, and I'm not quite sure how to fix it. If we get another party in there, and there are multiple parties, I don't know if more parties is going to make it better or worse. I fear worse.
And Bill, your parting thoughts?
Well, I really like the idea of having a convention on a cruise ship, and if maybe they can do a Disney tour and they can meet up with the guys from Duck Dynasty, since Disney is owns A&E, at least in 50, and we could really get this all sorted out.
Put them on a ship until they figure
Happy
it out.
Happy New Year, everybody,
yeah.
By the way.
Gentlemen, it's been yet another wonderful Sunday afternoon. Be good, be safe, and we'll be back again next week.
Next year.
Next year.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.